Thank you. Please, the court. Mike Walry, I'm here on behalf of Warble Affair Service. There's 4 points that I think we'd like to make in oral argument. The first...
Yesterday we talked about three, didn't we?
Well, three and a half. We're going to see if we can do. We're going to see if we can do 4 and 10 as opposed to 3 and. the first issue I think has to do with that the tax court really used the wrong canons of statutory construction in construing this statute. This is clearly Indian legislation, the Indian Employment Credit. And it should have been considered, as the Federal Circuit has suggested in the Doyon case, tax statutes intended to promote Indian policy should be construed as other Indian legislation with liberal construction in favor of providing a benefit to Indians. What's really important is the tax court, while that was extensively briefed below, the tax court simply did not apply that standard and it's very straightforward. Pointed out on in the excerpt 20. Secondly, the tax court was very confused by and throughout the issue, the whole issue of the Venati decision and how it relates to the statute has confused the issue greatly. Of course, that decision held that there is no Indian country, that ANSA corporation land is not Indian country and therefore would not be a reservation. That's entirely irrelevant to this case, but it continually pops up and was even discussed by the tax court. It's irrelevant because the statute in question here clearly makes ANSA lands reservations for these tax purposes.
How does it say it? How does that act?
Well,
does it just list the ANSA land as included?
Yeah, I wish the tax code was so straightforward. No, it makes you have to go through three reiterations of statute because of the cross references. But it basically says that reservation land, that you have to be within the reservation
statute,
right? And then you go back to the definition within the tax code of what a reservation is. And it says, well, look at the definitions in the Indian Welfare Act and the Indian Financing Act. And by the time you get to that point, Indian Financing Act clearly contains the definition of ANSA lands as Indian reservations. And as we point out, ANSA lands, while the general principle that ANSA lands are not reservations is the general rule, Congress has, since the Claims Act, passed several pieces of legislation that do exactly this, that treat them as reservations for specific purposes, and this is one of them.
I guess then the question is how much can you imagine a reservation that looks like a donut? Or more like a circle instead?
Well, that's the fourth issue, actually, and I might as well jump to that. And the simple fact is that this is a statute that has general application throughout the country. And as this court I apologize if I got this name wrong, Bugadig, basically points out, as this court, it's very common for reservations to have inholders of fee interest
land.
There's
no question about that.
Right. And everybody agrees on that. And lots of times it's a donut. The Flathead Reservation, of course, has a huge donut in the middle of it, Flathead Lake. It's not uncommon to have fee interest lands inside a reservation.
Yeah, but that's different. What I was kind of asking is whether you can have a reservation that has non-reservation land within it, not just fee land. In other words, the way reservations are described in down where they have reservations still, is by meets and bounds. They say, anything presumably that's inside that is within the reservation.
But
when we're imagining a reservation up here, do we imagine the meets and bounds make the reservation look like a donut, or does it look more like a plate, circular plate?
Well, that's our point, is that the term is not on reservation. It's within a reservation, within the, you know, and I assume that within, it connotates some notion of boundaries, and of course, within, by definition, means you have to have boundaries, and if you're within those boundaries, you're within those boundaries.
You're completely encircled, is that right?
Yes. It is 100% encircled, and inside the donut, is a checkerboard system of all kinds of lands, including village corporation lands, regional corporation lands, native allotments, which are, of course, under the Venati decision, are in fact technically Indian country, and federal restricted townsite lots, which are, of course, Indian country under Carlo versus Gustafson and the footnote in Venati. So it's not a donut, you know. I mean, this would be a pretty ugly donut if you went to a donut shop, because it would have all kinds of specks inside of it, maybe like a sprinkled donut inside. But it's really not a real donut. It's really a checkerboard system of land, which is very common in the lower 48 throughout Indian country, throughout reservations. I guess my final point, in an effort to reserve some time, is the notion that the court really, the court, and it gets back to the first point in terms of interpretation, is the court somehow comes up with the idea, and the logic is, I mean, this is the court's logic, is that the term within is ambiguous, but that it clearly does not mean within, that it means on reservation. And I can see saying that within is ambiguous to some degree, and we have to come up with some kind of rule as to what within means. As, you know, is it a donut or is it not a donut?
Well, it gets to be hard if the hole in the donut is 100 miles across.
It gets very difficult, but that just doesn't happen, not even on the Navajo reservation.
You look at some of the Western reservations, and you know they're not donuts; they look more like checkerboards in many respects.
Right, and that's what you have here is this huge checkerboards. You have this checkerboard system.
But if we take your theory that within doesn't mean on because it doesn't say that, and that there's some ambiguity, and then you go to the legislative and you recognize what they were trying to do, and they used the word on pretty clearly, and that would be in favor of the natives or the Indians. Wouldn't you end up back at the same place that within means on, basically?
Well, not really, because it assumes a different purpose. Because the purpose here is not to give a tax benefit to somebody who holds a particular tax or a particular status of land. The purpose of the statute is to employ Indians within the reservation. And if you're employing Indians within the reservation, I assume boundaries, of course, that's what we argue, then whether or not they're working on fee simple land here and whether or not they're working on reservation land here should make no difference, except
but
it does.
Let me just ask you this. Wouldn't the whole state of Alaska in some respects be within a reservation there?
No, because
why not?
First, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, what it does mean is that, well, first, it's kind of unusual to have an entire community totally surrounded through selection by ancient lands. A lot of times, most of the lands are like, for example, in the Yukon Flats, you have checkerboard selections under a maximization agreement, this kind of thing. And so you don't have this wholly encompassing block of land.
No, but you take the whole state of Alaska, make the boundaries the state of Alaska. I mean, it just seems under your rule, we'd have to kind of figure out under every land configuration what the answer was.
No, because, for example, the whole state of Alaska is not encompassed within ANCSA lands. The whole state of Alaska actually encompasses those ANCSA lands. It's quite the opposite. And so, while it does suggest that in a majority of rural communities, which, of course, are economically deprived, those communities are going to receive this economic development benefit. But like, for example, here in Anchorage, probably very unlikely, because you don't have, for example, the village of Eklutna, which is the village over here, totally encompassing Anchorage, nor any other village doing that, or any other major non-native community in Alaska. That's just not simply the way the land status works. Where it does work in this particular way is in these small rural villages where you have lands that are blocked in and totally encompass the community. And that's not the case in every community. So if I can reserve my 40 seconds, I'll do that.
Well,
there aren't any more questions.
A couple of things. What makes you think the reservation what's the name of the big lake you named? I don't know why I probably wasn't there.
Flathead.
Oh, Flathead Lake. Yeah, is a donut.
Subsurface claims of the state of Montana, if I'm not mistaken. But I could be wrong.
I gave an opinion many years ago, and which in effect gave the southern half of Flathead Lake back to the tribes.
Right.
You got the same situation in Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah.
Half and half, basically.
Yeah.
But anyway, the other thing is, they used to have a slogan in a donut shop in Los Angeles that read, "As you travel on through life, brother, whatever be your goal, keep your eye upon the donut, not upon the hole."
And I think that should be the rule of this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
This case involves the interplay of the Indian Employment Credit enacted in 1993 and the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act enacted in 1971. I would submit that we have a very different situation here from the situation we would have if the same case arose in the contiguous 48 states, and the answer would be different because of the way the statutes work.
And I'm glad to hear you say that, but it's not the way your brief is written. The brief seems to argue that to be within a reservation anywhere in the 50 states, you have to be on Indian land, not fee land.
I don't disavow anything I said in the brief. I just have a different perspective on it now.
Well, I understand the question you just raised, which it seems to me is a crucial one, and that is, does that transfer very well to Alaska?
No, because the way of the definitions work, the definition of Indian reservation in the statute refers to the Indian Finance Act and the Indian Child Welfare Act. The definition of the Indian Child Welfare Act in turn refers to the definition of Indian country defined in 18 U.S.C. section 1151. Well, if you refer to the definition of Indian country, Indian country is specifically defined to include rights of way. In other words, if I could get
it's also defined to include fee land within a reservation.
Well, yes, it includes.
Notwithstanding any patent.
It includes Indian allotments.
It includes Anglo purchased land.
And it includes rights of way, which I assume this airport property is. So, assuming that an airport property is the right of way, the answer to the question would be different in the contiguous 48 states. You would look at it and say, Indian country specifically includes rights of way. If this is a right of way, therefore, the person who employed Indian on a right-of-way would get the credit in the contiguous 48 states. The ANCSA was specifically adopted to abolish the reservation system in Alaska. The whole Indian system in Alaska is very different from the Indian system in the contiguous 48 states. They don't have the whole bad history that was true in the 48 states. The purpose of ANCSA was to abolish the reservation system and to make the Indians self-governing. So land was parceled out to these village corporations, and the statute 43 U.S.C. section 1613 specifically provides that title to land on which an airport is located is required to be conveyed to the federal or state government or appropriate municipal corporation. So here you have under ANCSA, it's very different from the definition of Indian country. Indian country, right-of-ways are specifically included, and the Supreme Court has held in the Alaska versus Native Village of Benetee Tribal Government, under 522 U.S. 520, that a village corporation isn't included within the definition of Indian country. So then you look to, so you have a very different situation. You have airport land specifically excluded in the Alaskan system, whereas I believe it would be part of, a right-of-way and would be included in the contiguous 48. So I think we have a uniquely Alaskan situation here. So then you have to, since it's not within Indian it's not reservation property, you have to look at the phrase, what does within an Indian reservation mean? Well, we submit that the tax court correctly concluded that it means on a reservation, because you have to look to the legislative history and you look to the rest of the statute.
Would this taxpayer qualify if his land was located on village selected land?
You mean if it's private property?
Let's say the village says we'd like to come in and build a gas station on. We'll lease you some land on the lands we selected under ANCSA, and we want you to come in and build a gas station here. If we employed some local natives that lived there, would you get the tax credit?
I believe he would, because under the Indian Finance Act defines a reservation to include the incorporated native groups, regional corporations. And it says land held. Now, I don't know what held means. Maybe that's another subject for litigation, whether it means owned or, does held mean owned? But if, land held by incorporated native groups and village corporations under the provision of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, that is specifically defined and specifically covered.
Okay.
So the problem in this case is it's not held, whatever held means, it's not land that's held by these village corporations.
I'm trying to see how much different you believe Alaska is from the lower 48. And
well, it's different because of the way of the different definitions. For example, the ANCSA, land held by ANCSA, is specifically included in the definition of reservation under 25 U.S.C. 1452D. And taxpayer concedes that this property is not reservation property. I presume, though I can't speak for him, that he would not make that concession if it was in the contiguous 48 states, because the definition of Indian country, which is included in the definition of reservation within the Indian Child Welfare Act, that would be included. So taxpayer concedes that this property is not Indian reservation property. So then the question comes to, what does the word within mean? So it's our position that the court below correctly held that within means on. Specifically, you have to look at section, the remaining part of the statute supports that interpretation. When you look to 41C1C, one of the qualifications for this credit is that the principal place of abode of such employee while performing such services is on or near the reservation in which the services are performed. So the statute makes it quite clear that the services are performed on the reservation when it says reservation in which the services are performed. So when you read that subsection,
it's on or near, doesn't it?
On or near the reservation in which the services are performed. So it basically says reservation in which the services are performed. In other words, the services have to be performed on the reservation, but the Indian doesn't have to live on the reservation. He only has to live on or near the reservation.
See, I guess what threw me off a little bit is the Frontier Brief at page 11 says, Congress knows the difference between, on the one hand, land within an Indian reservation, and on the other hand, land, whether reservation property or not, situated within the exterior boundaries of an Indian reservation. Land that's situated within the exterior boundaries of an Indian reservation is reservation land, by definition.
Well,
I don't understand how you can differentiate between land within an Indian reservation and land within the exterior boundaries of an Indian reservation.
Well, the Congress has used different language for different statutes, and the courts have construed the language differently. For example, this court, I believe it was in the case of Louis, construed language within an Indian reservation to exclude fee land. The Eighth Circuit disagreed.
What was this?
Louis was the case cited in my brief that was in the early part of the 20th century. The Eighth Circuit disagreed with that. So this court has disagreed with the Eighth Circuit on the interpretation of that phrase.
What year was
that?
1920.
It was maybe before 1920. It was 1921, actually. Louis versus United States. This court said the fact that the land was situated within the limits or boundaries of an Indian reservation is immaterial. So it specifically held that fee land was not, the phrase within an Indian reservation did not include fee land, and then the Eighth Circuit came to the opposite conclusion.
Actually, I think so was the Supreme Court and a lot of other people. In other words, the question in Louis was, when an Indian commits a major crime on fee land within a reservation, is he subject to the Major Crimes Act?
Yes.
The answer to that is clearly yes. I can write an awful long letter saying that it is. It's the fact that it's fee land. The Supreme Court has said that there are limits to the power of tribal courts over non-Indians who are on fee land. They've never said that fee land within a reservation is not reservation land. That's just
Well, the statute was amended because of these decisions, including the decision of this court. So the point is that all these statutes have different histories and they have to be interpreted in light of the history.
I mean, does anybody take a brief like this and put it in front of the Department of Interior and ask them what they think of it?
We did ask. This brief was sent to the, I believe, the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They did have input into our position.
I understand what comes through in the brief, and it's, there's a lot of talk about reservation land as if reservation land has to be trust land. And it doesn't in the lower 48. Now, it may be when you move to Alaska, you've got a really different situation.
Well, I think there is a different situation because Congress in 1971 abolished the whole reservation situation in Alaska. It didn't do so in the contiguous 48. It wanted to make the Alaskan self-governing, so you have a whole different situation in Alaska. And the statutes were amended to reflect that difference. So you have the Indian, and that you have the Supreme Court specifically saying, specifically holding in this Benetti case that the definition of Indian country doesn't apply to, you know, ANCSA land, whereas here you're telling me under the definition of Indian country, fee land is within the definition of Indian country. Well, the situation is very different.
That's longstanding Indian law.
So we have a different situation in Alaska, and we're not even dealing with fee land here. We're dealing with airport property, air reservation property, 43 U.S.C. Section 1613, title to land on airport, which an airport is located, is required to be conveyed to federal or state governments or airport municipal corporations. So, frankly, to talk about fee land is sort of a red herring in this case. This doesn't involve fee land. It involves basically airport property. No one, and property which
who
is...
Who owns it?
Pardon?
Who owns it?
I believe the United States government, and I believe the state of Alaska also. The state of Alaska owns the property on which the Air Charter Service is situated, and the taxpayer leases this property from the state of Alaska. And I believe that another part of the air navigation strip is also owned by the federal government. So we're not dealing with this whole history of, you know, the General Allotment Act and property that, you know, was allotted to the Indians and then sold out. That simply has no application here, and it sort of confuses the issue to talk about it. All we're dealing with is, you know, an airstrip, really.
Well, I think the difficulty in your brief is that there's lots of broad statements about Indian law that don't really focus on Alaska. So I guess what I'm confused about is, do you think that because it relates solely to Alaska that the IFA definition is the definition we should be using, or do you think that the Indian country definition, which is more consistent with the general Indian law under the Indian Child Welfare Act, should be included also because it is referenced in the tax legislation?
The Indian country definition has absolutely no application here. The Supreme Court has said so in Alaska versus Native Village of Benetti Tribal Government. The definition that's relevant is in the Indian Finance Act, which is 25 U.S.C. 1452. And it is conceded in this case that the property involved here does not fall within that definition. The taxpayer has conceded that. So it's our position that in light of that concession, we have to look at the legislative history that basically says, it repeatedly talks about attempting to help businesses on a reservation. And it's conceded that the property here is not on a reservation. So it's our position that we have a situation that is a peculiarly Alaskan situation, and that the decision of the court below is correct for the reasons stated by the tax court.
Okay, I hope that if we accept your view, it won't lead the department to believe that a tax exemption should be denied to businesses on fee land, non-Indian owned fee land within the exterior boundaries of Indian reservations in the lower 48.
Well, I'm not aware of any such case, but I, you know,
no, I think
it could be. Mm-hmm.
All right. Any rebuttal?
Yes. the first point is that's not what the tax court held. What the tax court held is quite contrary to, as the comments from the court have noted, a concept which would apply in the lower 48, that
on reservation basically means Indian land within the reservation, and that fee land is excluded from that benefit of the Indian economic or the Indian employment credit. Secondly,
I'm not sure that you have to go that far, because you know, you have kind of these conflicting ons. What does on mean? Because
right.
within, and then if you go to Indian country, it defines Indian country as being within exterior boundaries.
Right.
So I'm not sure that the tax court's analysis somehow excludes fee land that actually falls within the exterior boundaries, if you had such a situation.
I think it does, actually. I think that it's pretty clear that they are excluding all fee land within the exterior boundaries of an Indian reservation, even within the lower 48. The logic of the decision makes no peculiar distinction between Alaska and the lower 48 at anywhere in the decision.
Of course, we don't need to accept their rationale. If we were to uphold them, we don't have to adopt their legal rationale, correct?
Well, I'm not so sure that's the case, because what it would suggest is that this court would basically reconsider the whole matter de novo and would not allow the tax court an opportunity of its instructions on remand.
We do. It's a statutory interpretation.
Right.
We do look at de novo all the time. We don't send things back to the district court and the tax court to say, you know, take another stab at interpreting the statute. It doesn't work that way.
But the court has raised the second point is the court has raised a very interesting point. And that is, in terms of a concession, the notion that the taxpayer has conceded that this is not reservation land. No, it is stipulated. The stipulated facts speak for themselves. What the taxpayer stipulated to is that the land is owned by the United States government and the state of Alaska, and it's a very complex land tenure system that we don't go into in great detail. But essentially, it's a former defense site that's been reduced under the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act and then deeded over to the state of Alaska with substantial reversionary clauses because it's a military base and an aviation site. But aside from all of that, the point here is this idea about right-of-ways, which is kind of interesting. I think it has been raised on an oral argument, I think, for the first time. And that is that should you just take a look at the Indian Financing Act alone, and you say, okay, the Indian Financing Act, allow consideration of the general definition that talks about, of Indian country, that talks about the inclusion of all fee land within, and has been interpreted that way, to include all fee land within the exterior boundaries of the reservation. And that's the concept fundamentally that is at litigation. The fundamental concept is that anywhere in the country, unless you have a disestablished reservation, anywhere in the country, the reservation boundaries define what the exterior boundaries of that reservation define what that reservation is. And the land, I would suggest that Judge Campy is correct, that the land within that exterior boundary.
Yeah, but that's usually as defined by Indian country. And here, we don't really have a reservation. Instead, we have a word called reservation that is applied in Alaska to certain discrete corporate holdings, if you will, based on the outflow after ANCSA. So it seems to me a little bit different situation here, because you do have the Congress looking specifically at Alaska under the IFA, and that raises a question as to whether with that specific reference, you would even go to the general reference that you're talking about.
The problem with that interpretation is it totally rewrites the statute to suggest that only ANCSA corporations can avail themselves of this tax statute. And if that's what Congress meant, Congress would have said,
only ANCSA corporations could avail themselves of this tax credit. That's not what they said. They used the geographical designation of within reservations and left it, unfortunately, up to you to figure out exactly where, you know, are we talking about the donut or the hole? And the logic here is that this is a geographical designation designed, and I think we have to take into account the whole purpose of the statute, which is to promote employment of Indians within reservations. If you're promoting employment of Indians within a reservation, the relative status of the land within the reservation is irrelevant to that goal of providing employment within the reservation for Indian people. And that is the crux of this decision. Because not only does it say that that purpose, that congressional purpose of promoting employment within the reservation for Indian people is only restricted to certain parts of the certain parts of the area that are owned, in fact, by the Native corporation. But it also takes that same logic and extends it through to the lower 48 and not restrict it to Alaska. So we would suggest that the whole matter should be reversed and remanded, and that the court should keep in mind the fundamental purpose of this act, which is to promote employment of Indian people within the reservation. And that would include fee simple lands within the exterior boundaries of the reservation, or in this particular case, the ANCSA corporation.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Matter will stand submitted.